So, on a Greek island that's basically famous for, sunbaked ruins and massive bronze statues of antiquity.
And miles of modern beach resorts.
Right, exactly. Miles of resorts. The most spectacular biological phenomenon isn't actually found anywhere near the sea.
No, not at all.
It's actually hiding in this dark, damp ravine inland. And strangely enough, the creature at the center of this entire ecosystem isn't even what the locals call it.
Which is a fascinating misnomer right out of the gate.
Yeah, totally. So if you're planning a trip to Rhodes, you probably immediately picture the classic Mediterranean dream, right? The bright glare of the sun on the white sand, the massive medieval walls of the old
A
town.
constant thrum of coastal energy, yeah.
Right. But today we are taking a deep dive into an entirely different atmosphere. We're going to explore the greener, kind of hidden interior of the island, specifically a place known as Petalodes, or the Valley of the Butterflies.
And, naming conventions aside, the reason this Pacific Valley captures so much attention is because it offers, well, a complete inversion of the typical Mediterranean travel experience.
How do you mean?
Well, when you visit a Greek island, your sensory baseline is just exposure.
Oh, right.
You're exposed to the wind, to the reflective light of the Aegean Sea, to the sheer heat of the open plains. But Petalodes is this localized anomaly.
Yeah, it's completely different.
It's a deeply shaded, serene, hydrologically active pocket of forest. It honestly feels like it belongs in an entirely different climate zone.
I really want to break down exactly how an anomaly like that even exists because, you don't just magically teleport into this shaded
No,
forest.
you have to get there first.
Exactly. To understand the valley, we kind of have to look at the transition required to get there. You're leaving behind this heavy, resort-driven, highly developed coastline, right? You're driving inland, and the environment physically shifts. And I've been trying to wrap my head around the mechanics of it. It's essentially acting as a natural terracotta cooling pot, right?
Wow, that's actually a highly accurate way to visualize it.
Really? Where the geography itself is just pulling heat out of the air?
Yeah, exactly. Because, a terracotta pot cools water through evaporation, and the valley uses the exact same thermodynamic
Oh,
principle.
that makes sense.
You have the Pelicanos River running through this very narrow, steep-sided ravine, so the running water is constantly evaporating.
But normally that would just dry up in Greece, right?
Normally, yes,
Yeah.
out on the open plains, that moisture would just be burned off by the sun or blown away by the coastal winds.
Yeah.
But here, the valley is covered by this remarkably dense canopy of sweet gum trees.
Right, the liquid Dambar orientalis.
Yes.
I noticed in the research that these trees are central to the whole ecosystem. But how did a tree that typically thrives in like much wetter climates end up forming a massive canopy on a dry Mediterranean island?
Well, it's actually a remnant of a much older geological epoch.
Wait, really? Like prehistoric?
Yeah. Millions of years ago, the climate of the Mediterranean was vastly different. It was far more humid.
Oh, wow.
So as the region dried out over the millennia, these sweet gum trees died off almost everywhere else. But they managed to survive in this one specific ravine on Rhodes because the steep walls trap the moisture from the river.
So that canopy basically acts like a lid.
Exactly like a lid, it catches the evaporating water, which creates this perpetual thermal barrier.
That's
When
incredible.
you step into the valley, you are literally stepping into a biological air conditioning unit. The temperature drops dramatically.
Which I guess brings us to the actual inhabitants of this air conditioning unit. And this is the paradox I mentioned earlier.
Right, the butterflies, or rather, the lack thereof.
Yeah, it's called the Valley of the Butterflies. But the creature swarming this valley in the hundreds of thousands every summer isn't a butterfly at
No,
all.
it's not.
It's the Jersey tiger moth, or Panaxia quadripunctaria. And I'm struggling to see how a moth, which most of us associate with, buzzing around a porch light at night, becomes a world-class daytime tourist draw.
It really comes down to their visual presentation and their behavior.
Okay.
The Jersey tiger moth is a day-flying moth, which immediately blurs the line for the casual observer. And they are visually striking.
They don't look like typical brown moths, right?
Not at all. When they're resting, they look almost like geometric arrowheads.
Mm.
They have these sharp, zebra-like black and yellowish-white stripes covering their forewings.
So they camouflage.
Perfectly. They
Yeah.
blend right into the dappled shade of the rocks and the tree trunks. But when they take flight, they reveal their hindwings, which are this brilliant, flashing orange-red.
Ah, so it's a defense mechanism, isn't it? Startle coloration.
Precisely. It's designed to confuse predators.
Like birds.
Yeah, bird sees a flash of bright red, goes to strike, but then the moth lands, covers the red with its striped camouflage, and effectively just vanishes.
That is so smart.
It is. So to a traveler walking through the valley, you just see thousands of bright, colorful flashes darting through the air during the day. It's really easy to see why the locals just called them butterflies.
I mean, yeah, fair enough. But if they're just flying around trying not to get eaten, why do hundreds of thousands of them converge on this one specific valley?
That's the real question.
Are they mating? Is this like a massive feeding ground? If I'm flying all the way to Greece, I want to understand the biological magic happening in front of me.
Well, prepare to be surprised, because they aren't there to mate, and they aren't there to feed.
What?
In fact, they are there to do as little as possible.
How does that work?
The phenomenon you're witnessing in Petlouds during the summer is called estivation. It's basically the summer equivalent of hibernation.
Oh, because the heat is too much for them.
Exactly. The Mediterranean summer heat is lethal to these insects. So when the temperature spikes, they migrate into this terracotta cooling pot of a valley just to survive.
So they're just seeking refuge.
It's more than just refuge. During this phase, these moths don't even have functional stomachs.
Wait, are you serious? They don't have stomachs.
They cannot eat. They have to survive entirely on the fat reserves they built up during their caterpillar stage.
That is wild.
Right. They gather in these massive, dense clusters on the trunks of the sweet gum trees for two main reasons. First, the trees secrete a resin, locally called storax, that smells strongly of vanilla.
Oh, nice.
And that actively attracts the moths. Second, they're just trying to stay cool and conserve every single microjoule of energy until the end of the summer when they can finally mate.
Okay, let me stop you right there, because that completely changes the entire context of how a visitor should behave in this valley.
Yes, it really does.
If these moths cannot eat, and they're basically living on a finite battery pack of stored fat, then every time a tourist claps their hands or shouts to make them fly, just so they can see that bright red color,
they're literally killing them.
Wow, they're killing them.
That is the fragile reality of the ecosystem. Forcing them to take flight burns energy they cannot replace.
Because they don't have stomachs.
Exactly. If they run out of energy before the end of the summer, they die before reproducing, which threatens the entire population.
That's devastating.
This is why the valley demands a fundamentally different mindset from the rest of the island. You know, you're leaving the loud, uninhibited energy of the beach resorts to enter a space that requires profound quiet. It is really an exercise in passive observation.
You're shifting from being a participant on the beach to being like a ghost in the forest. You just observe.
A ghost in the forest. I like that.
And this requirement for silence actually ties beautifully into the human footprint in the valley, too. Because it's not just trees and moths, right?
Mm.
At the top of the valley, you have the monastery of Kalapetra.
Yeah, and the monastery reinforces the entire atmosphere of the space. It was built in the late 18th century, and it's placed there for the exact same reasons the moths gather.
Isolation and peace.
Isolation, peace, and the presence of fresh water. When you walk the shaded paths, cross the little wooden bridges over the streams, and finally arrive at this quiet monastic courtyard, the natural and the cultural histories of the island just seamlessly overlap.
It sounds incredible. But getting to that overlap obviously takes some planning. Looking at the maps, there are essentially three distinct portals into this forest, depending on where you set up your base camp.
Right, depending on where your hotel is.
Exactly. You have a route starting from the historic capital of Rhodestown, one starting from the coastal resort strip of Vixia, and then a much shorter, more direct route from Cremasti on the western plain.
Mm-hmm.
So my question is this drive just a mundane commute you have to endure, or is there a way to like read the landscape as you go?
Oh, the drive is absolutely a geographical narrative.
Really?
Definitely. Mm-hmm. If you take the longest route from Rhodestown, for instance, you're tracing the economic and historical evolution of the island in real time.
Oh, I see what you mean.
You start surrounded by the massive fortifications of the Knights Hospitaller, right? Deep history. Then you drive through the western coastal strip, which is the modern economic engine, hotels, water parks, traffic.
The loud stuff.
Yeah, the loud stuff. But as soon as you pivot inland toward Paradisi and Petalouds, the commercial density just drops away. The roads narrow. The agriculture takes over.
So you're basically peeling back the layers. You're watching the modern tourist infrastructure fade in your rearview mirror.
And psychologically, you really need that buffer. If you step straight out of a booming beach club and into the silent valley of the moths, the contrast would be too jarring.
Yeah, total system shock.
The inland drive acts as a decompression zone. It prepares your senses for the subtlety of the running water and the shaded paths.
Because it is such a slow, meditative experience, I can easily see someone wanting to balance out their day. You know, you've made the effort to leap the coast, you've spent the morning walking quietly through the ravine, but you probably still have half a day left.
You usually do, yeah.
And the research points to two massive complementary experiences nearby: Pharma of Rhodes and Flirmos Hill. Let's tackle Pharma of Rhodes first. This seems specifically geared as a pressure release valve for families.
It really is. It is the perfect psychological counterbalance for children.
How so?
Well, think about what we just discussed regarding estivation and the moths. The valley requires kids to suppress their natural instincts.
Oh, right. No running, no shouting.
No touching. That takes a lot of cognitive restraint for a child. But Pharma of Rhodes, which is situated close by in the rural interior, is this interactive petting zoo in agricultural space.
So it's basically the tactile reward for their patients.
Exactly, the mechanism at play. They transition from a strict look but don't touch environment into a space where they can pet ostriches, interact with lemurs, and just run around in an open rural setting.
That makes total sense.
It caters to a completely different type of biological curiosity.
But what if you're a traveler who prefers deep history over petting zoos? If the Valley of the Butterflies gives you a microview of the island's unique biology, Flirmos Hill seems to provide the ultimate macro view of its civilization. I mean, this isn't just an old church on a hill.
No, not even close. Flirmos Hill is one of the most critical historical vantage points in the entire Mediterranean.
Really? The entire Mediterranean?
Yeah, we are talking about a 267-meter plateau that commands a view of the Aegean Sea. And because of that strategic height, it has been a magnet for every major civilization that has ever controlled Rhodes.
It's the Acropolis of ancient Analysos, right?
Yes, exactly. But it didn't stop with antiquity. The Phoenicians were there, then the ancient Greeks built the Temple of Athena Polias.
Wow.
Later, early Christians built a basilica over the temple, then the Byzantines built a monastery, then the Knights of St. John arrived and fortified it.
It just keeps going.
It does. Centuries later, during the 20th century, the Italians occupied Rhodes and added their own architectural layers, including the massive cross that dominates the skyline today.
It's just the psychological dominance of high ground, isn't it? Every time a new empire conquered the island, they didn't just build a new monument somewhere else. They deliberately built their sacred structures right on top of the previous empire's ruins.
At the highest possible point, yeah.
They were physically oscillating the history of the island.
Which is exactly why Flirmos is such an essential companion piece to the Valley of the Butterflies. Down in the valley, you have an ecosystem that has remained completely unchanged and indifferent to human empires for millennia.
The moths don't care who's in charge.
The moths do not care if the Byzantines or the Knights are in charge. But you drive a few miles up to Flirmos, and you are standing on a literal stack of human conquests.
That is such a cool contrast. You pair those three sites, the biology of Petalas, the modern rural agriculture of Pharma of Rhodes, and the stacked antiquity of Flirmos, and you've completely redefined the island.
You really have.
You walk away with an understanding of Rhodes that a tourist who never left their beach lounger simply cannot comprehend. But, you know, implementing this itinerary requires navigating the actual realities on the ground.
Let's talk about the biological clock of this trip. Timing is critical, isn't it?
Oh, the timing dictates the entire experience. The peak population of the Jersey tiger moth happens deep in the summer.
Right.
Which aligns perfectly with the absolute peak of the Mediterranean tourist season.
Of course it does.
The island is at its maximum capacity, and it is at its absolute hottest.
Which means if you show up at 2 in the afternoon, you are going to be shoulder to shoulder with thousands of other tourists on a narrow dirt path, effectively ruining the serenity the valley is famous for.
Yeah. You lose the silence, which means you lose the magic. Morning visits are basically non-negotiable.
Get there early.
You want to arrive before the heavy tour buses from the cruise ships deploy. A morning visit guarantees you experience the coolest temperatures of the day, allowing you to actually hear the subtle sounds of the Pelicanos River over the ambient noise of a crowd. That actually brings me to a highly specific detail in the logistics that I think reveals a lot about the nature of this hike. There are repeated warnings about footwear.
Yes.
It's emphasized that you need to leave the beach sandals behind and wear actual sneakers. At first glance, that just sounds like basic safety advice for walking on dirt paths and wooden ridges, you know? But I suspect there is a psychological component to this terrain.
You're spot on. It alters your
Proprioception.
Your awareness of your body in space.
Exactly. When you are walking on the flat, paved surface of a resort promenade or, you know, smooth beach sand, your brain can just go on autopilot. You look up, you look around, you don't think about your feet.
But when the path is uneven, when there are exposed roots and slick stones near a stream,
your brain has to shift gears.
Yeah.
The uneven terrain forces you to look down. It forces you to calculate your next step.
That's interesting.
This physical grounding anchors you firmly in the present moment. You cannot rush through pedal outs and flip-flops without risking a twisted ankle, which means the geography itself is enforcing a speed limit.
I love that, a geographical speed limit.
Right. Proper footwear allows you to navigate that uneven terrain safely, yes, but it also allows you to adopt the mindful, deliberate pace that the valley actually requires.
The environment dictates the rhythm.
Exactly.
We've traced a pretty incredible path today. We've moved from the high-energy, sun-baked coastal resorts through the historical transition of the inland roads and into the dark, evaporative cooling of the sweet gum canopy.
It's quite a journey.
It is. We unpacked the bizarre, fragile reality of the Jersey tiger moths, creatures without functioning stomachs, surviving the summer heat by holding perfectly still, relying on their zebra stripes to hide and their flashing red wings to startle.
And we've also explored how combining this delicate ecosystem with the layered imperial history of Filarimos Hill or the tactile release of Farma of Rose provides a comprehensive portrait of an island that is honestly too often reduced to a simple beach destination.
Totally agree. So the next time you find yourself on a Greek island and you hit that inevitable wall of sensory fatigue, you know, when you just cannot handle one more hour of relentless sun, sand, and crowds, I want to challenge you.
Mm.
Turn your back to the sea, lace up your shoes, head into the shaded interior, and seek out the running water. The greener, older, deeply quiet side of Rhodes is waiting for you.
And it leaves us with an intriguing proposition, really.
What's that?
Well, if a massive, spectacular gathering of hundreds of thousands of flashing, day-flying moths can remain successfully hidden in a cool, quiet ravine just miles away from some of the most heavily trafficked tourist beaches in the entire Mediterranean take.
Right.
It forces a broader question. What other ancient, delicate micro-ecosystems are hiding just out of sight all over the world, completely ignored by the masses, simply waiting for the traveler who is curious enough to take a gentle detour inland?
Wow. The world is full of hidden rooms. You just have to be willing to leave the noise behind and look for the door. Thanks for taking this deep dive with us today.